Introducing the Two-Way V4, where groundbreaking fuel cell technology meets fresh foam cushioning for the ultimate performance. With fuel cell, each step feels explosive, delivering unparalleled energy return. Paired with fresh foam, experience maximum comfort throughout the game. Its lightweight textile upper offers support and breathability without sacrificing agility. Whether you're hitting the clutch shot or locking down the opposition, the Two-Way V4 gives you the tools to play at a high level. Learn more and purchase the Two-Way for yourself at NewBalance.com.
Welcome into the Autzen Audibles podcast. I'm Matt Preem, Eric Scopel, Jared Mack on the show. Happy Thanksgiving. Hopefully everyone had a good holiday. It's now Black Friday. You're out there staving off craziness right now. And hopefully you guys can check out the podcast, check out duckterritory.com, because we've got a Black Friday sale ourselves. For the next 4 days, we are offering 75% off an annual subscription to duckterritory.com. The Ducks are going for their third straight Pac-12 championship. They're going for their third straight Pac-12 leading recruiting class. They're going for another top 10 recruiting class. Men's and women's basketball is in full swing now. You do not want to miss any of it. And you can get that for 75% off an annual membership to duckterritory.com. So if you or you a Duck fan you know is interested, go sign up today and get that huge savings. Biggest deal of the year. All right, we've got the Oregon versus Oregon State game, formerly known as the Civil War. Thoughts going into this one? It feels very down. It's a down time right now for Oregon athletics in general, right? Like, the football team got their butts kicked. The men's basketball team's gotten their butts kicked. The women's basketball team is banged up. They need a win. The school needs a win.
It feels like the city of Eugene needs a win. There's kind of a cloud cover. I will say the Thanksgiving festivities I took part of, a big talk was, what's going on with Oregon football? What the hell's going on with Oregon's basketball? Is Oregon's women's basketball team ever going to be healthy? These are the questions I was receiving, whereas usually this time of year, it's a lot more optimism and positivity because the teams are all winning. So that was a strange Thanksgiving. I'm sure a lot of those listening can relate to that there were a lot of conversations about things not going great with Oregon sports, which is not usually the way it goes during Thanksgiving. So it was a bit bizarre. And a win on Saturday against the bitter rivals with so much on the line would, I think, probably make everybody's holiday season a little bit better. I think we'll get into it. I think it's going to be a really competitive football game. Yeah. I mean, this is mm-hmm. And speaking with, again, not to go into too much of the talk around the turkey yesterday, but a lot of it was questions to me as the quote unquote expert of, can Oregon win this football game? And a lot of my answers were, well, I think so, but it certainly wasn't as definitive as I would have anticipated my answers would be even a week ago, when I would have looked at this game and said, yeah, Oregon will probably win by a touchdown, maybe two, something like that. It's hard to really sit here and predict something like that, knowing that A, Oregon State and Utah, pretty similar teams in terms of what they do offensively, stylistically, mm-hmm. and that these teams played head-to-head, Oregon State and Utah, and Oregon State won that game. So, there's certainly reasons to be concerned going into this one, and hopefully Oregon can figure it out.
I think there's a lot of reasons to be concerned in this one. But same idea where, 2 weeks ago you asked me, and I'm like, yeah, I know Oregon should win this game against Oregon State after they beat Utah. And they go to Utah and they get smoked. Now you're kind of questioning, what is it that this team does really well? Because Oregon State has a very similar offense to Utah. All three of these teams, Oregon State, and Utah, have pretty similar offenses. I was doing some number diving, and Oregon and Oregon State, in terms of Pac-12 rankings for team statistics, are very eerily similar. They are third and fourth, meaning Oregon State in third place and Oregon fourth place for the Pac-12 in points per game, yards per game. They're first and third in rush yards per game, second and third in yards per game, tied for first and in second for rushing touchdowns, both tied for first in first downs per game, and fifth and sixth in defense and points per game allowed. They are neck and neck in terms of their statistical values. And that's a bit concerning when you go into this game, because they both teams do things really well. They happen to do the same things well. I thought that might have helped Oregon when they played Utah, because I felt that they did similar things well, and they might be able to just beat off that and playing their own team every week during practice. Clearly that did not help. And I'm not sure if it'll help in this week either. I have no idea. It's really going to come down to what Oregon does in terms of their preparation for the week and their adjustments that they've made over the week, especially after watching the Utah film. So regardless, seems like it's going to be a good game on Saturday. So that is something to look forward to.
You guys were at practice this week. Just the vibe of the team. Can you guys just articulate just where this team is at? I think speaking with Angie Machado on Beaver Blitz on that preview show, she was asking us about that. I did a radio hit with an Oregon State station in Corvallis this week. They were asking about just the mental space of this team. I think that is probably going to be one of the biggest questions I have is just where is this team at after such a deflating, emotionally draining loss? And
right.
you just didn't get your ass kicked. You got your ass kicked on national television, the most watched ABC primetime game for Pac-12 sports since 2014. Like 4 million people watched that game against Utah. And so not only did you just get embarrassed and your ass kicked, you also lost the playoff. So I think the emotional state of this team is going to be a big key of how quickly do they come out, or is there a hangover effect?
No, that for sure. I mean, I don't think there's any question. And I trust the culture. I mean, if there's one thing I'll say about Oregon is under Mario Cristobal is it doesn't seem to me, at least, like the culture really flinches in some spots. And I will say, maybe we started seeing it cracking against Utah. Maybe that was what we saw with some of the finger pointing from the receivers and the quarterbacks and some of that. Maybe that was a sign of maybe things aren't quite as sturdy and strong as I think they are from a support perspective. Because I think that, you know, you build the program and it's obviously built upon the players you have on it, the coaches you have on it, but it's also the chemistry. And it's the way everything fits together. I think one of the real strengths under Mario Cristobal, and I think those maybe on the outside looking in don't understand this part quite as much, is just how close everybody is and the strength and the camaraderie, the culture that's put together, the way Mario, I think, builds teams together in very particular ways with the way they go about doing their business, with the way everything is approached with that one-and-know mentality. And maybe we've started to see some of that fraying. You know, maybe it started with Micah Pittman taking off. Maybe it kind of escalated a little bit during Utah with a tough loss and with the way, you know, again, the receivers were and Anthony Brown were chirping at each other. And Anthony was very careful with what he said and basically said, no, I don't think that narrative's real. There, you know, that what took place there was competitors competing and being frustrated with the result, which sure that adds up, but you don't want to see it take place like it did, where it's on the field on national TV, where it looks like things are starting to kind of fall apart a little bit. You know, in terms of what was said in the general mood, I didn't feel like it was much different than any other week, to be honest with you. You know, I think Travis Dye did a good job of articulating the fact that, you know, it isn't just another week though, because this is a rivalry game. This is a game with everything on the line. Like, I think that part was clear. From my perspective, I'm not overly concerned about the culture being broken, quote unquote, and they show up and just don't show up and don't compete. Like, there's too much pride. There's too much on the line within this team. At the same time, like, I think I can't remember which podcast we mentioned this or if it was off air. There's a scenario in my mind where even if they do come out with their A game, or maybe not even their A game, but they come out really dialed in and focused, because I don't know if the A game is even really a possibility given some of the injuries at this point. But there's a possibility I could see them coming out focused and still not being able to win the game, because Oregon State's playing right now at a pretty darn high level. And so that's something to be aware of too. I don't expect Oregon to bend over and just not compete and lose in a lopsided fashion for a second consecutive week. That doesn't necessarily mean they're going to win though. And Oregon State, as we've established, is a very capable team that is also very hungry, that also has a lot on the line and never wants to lose this game, because they understand the way the relationship is perceived of big brother, little brother. And this one means a lot to them. So that's a long about way of saying, I guess, I don't know exactly where things are at, but at the same time, like, everything that's been said is in line with what you'd want them to say at this point.
Yeah, I agree. There's just from talking to Dawson Jaramillo on Tuesday after practice, you know, he was saying all the things you'd expect to hear, like that the team is still in good shapes, or good shape in general. They can't look too much on the Utah loss, because if they do that, then he said that they'll get beat twice this week, because they'll be wanting to think about that more than actually thinking about what's ahead of them in Oregon State. And I thought that was a really interesting perspective of it all. But yeah, this week means more. It's a rivalry week. It's a trip to the Pac-12 championship on the line. The players know that, the team knows it, the coaches, the administrators, all of them know that this game is almost as equally as important as last week's game against Utah, going into it, I should say. And obviously a trip to the Pac-12 championship game would be great. That's a shot at another Pac-12 title. They're Oregon's third straight, it would be. I think there, a little bit is more importantly, you're beating Oregon State to get there.
Yeah.
And this is, I'm not worried about the culture at Oregon and under Coach Cristobal. This is why he's here. This is what he's brought in. This is the type of talent he recruits to come in here and coach and play and all of that. And but it's a big test because I don't think we've seen this before under Mario Cristobal, where maybe after the Arizona State loss, where they did have to play Oregon State again, it wasn't for the same circumstances, but you know, it's tough to come off those hard losses.
Yeah.
And they didn't play great against Oregon State in 2019. They ended up winning. You know, Brady Brees forced another fumble towards the end. And
really close game. Too close, right. Probably.
Too close. And this could be another situation. So this will be a really interesting game to watch and see how Oregon responds. I have confidence that they will respond. I haven't seen anything from the players, from the coaches, or anything all week that doesn't tell me that they're not pissed off after what happened against Utah and want to get back out onto the field and avenge that loss and, frankly, just move forward. Honestly, I think it would have been better if Oregon had a Friday game or a Thursday game against Oregon State, because they would have been able to get out on the field and not sit on this anymore. They would have been able to get out there and show that they have moved on, that they're still that talented team, that they were deserving at one point to be the number three team in the country. So I guess that's my long-winded answer of saying that no, I'm not overly concerned about the mentality of this team going forward.
I'm going to make a in-podcast pivot here. Senior day. But it's also going to be an opportunity maybe for some guys that are going to go pro playing their last games of the season. Let's run through the list here. And real quickly, is this their last game at Autzen, or will they come back?
Okay.
Travis Dodge.
Are we making predictions?
Yeah. We're going to do predictions, but there's a couple guys I want to just talk about real quick.
For sure.
Travis Dye, I think he comes back.
I'll say he goes. I don't know. Gone. I think it's really close. And the only reason he hesitated a little bit, he was asked about it, and he said, I'm still making a decision. So I think he's really weighing on it. So I'll say he doesn't come back.
I think he's gone. I think he's weighing on it for sure, as he should. You know, he has the option either to go pro or not. He doesn't have anything left to do at Oregon. It's as simple as that.
Along the offensive line, TJ Bass and Alex Forsyth. Forsyth has said now he's coming back. So you can wipe that one out. TJ Bass. I also think TJ Bass comes back.
I say TJ Bass comes back, but Big Sala goes pro.
Oh.
Ooh.
That's
I would just – I think those guys have been in the – I mean, Bass and Malasala have been here for a couple of years. They're JUCO players anyway. And for Malasala, it's like, does he want to wait till he's 25 to finish college? Like, I don't think he wants the George Moore path necessarily. And he's shown enough playing tackle and also guard. I think he could – get a look. So I think Bass is also possible, but I'll say he comes back. But Forsyth reiterated on Wednesday that he was not going to go pro, so that's sure that he comes back.
I think they both stay. Obviously Forsyth is staying. For Sala, I think he stays. I just don't think he's got a strong enough draft position. I think TJ Bass's draft position is better. Yeah. I still haven't heard anything about him. So that's a little concerning, even though he's played well this season. So I think they both come back. I think they solidify the tackle spots again next year for Oregon.
We all know Kayvon Thibodeau's gone. So let's stick really? With the defensive line here. Popo Amavi or Brandon Dorlus, do either of those guys go pro? I say one does.
Popo's been here for a really long time. I just would be surprised if he comes back. I don't know if Dorlus, that's pretty fast. It's 3 years. And I'll say Dorlus comes back, Popo goes, just because of not, it's not even who's more talented, it's who's been in school longer. It's like 5 years versus three.
I think they both go. I think Dorlis is having a wildly good year. I know the stats aren't going to show it, but every time that guy pops up and you watch the game on TV, that's like the only person they can talk about on the defensive line other than Kayvon Thibodeau. And he's been a monster. So I think some team is going to take a chance on him just because of how quickly he developed at Oregon. There's a chance that he develops that fast in the NFL as well. So both of them.
In the secondary, I think there's two guys that have definitive decisions to make. Mykael Wright and Verone McKinley. I'm going to say both of them are gone.
Yep. I'll agree. I think that's pretty, to me, it's pretty straightforward. I think Mykael has looked like a three and done for a while. I think Verone, there's some uncertainty. He's been so good this year, taken so many steps. And it honestly feels like he's doing so much media and stuff right now. It feels like he's kind of preparing himself for post-college because he's just got his eyes on that. Or maybe this is the NLI world we live in where people are, you know, athletes are going to be more focused on some of the non-football stuff as well. But I've just been impressed with the way he's taken on a lot of stuff this year, and I kind of think he's headed on the way out. So I'll say they both go.
I think they both go as well. I don't think it's necessarily been the season that Mykael had intended for himself or from like a general fan's perspective. Verone has obviously been a superstar. He's been one of the best players in the conference. And if I'm Verone, I capitalize on this year. There's always a chance that you come back and, you know, try to do something big and get injured. And then there goes your senior year. Kind of feels like, you know, the Brady Breeze effect again, second time in this pod, we're mentioning him, but then he chooses not to come back in the COVID shortened year. And I think that's a good thing because he went out on such a high note after such a great statistical and visually pleasing season in 2019, he was everywhere. So I think that's why Verone should go as well.
I think that's it from a draft perspective of guys who could go pro. I mean, maybe Bennett Williams decides to go, or maybe a Mace Funa, but those would all be pretty surprising, I think, in my eye.
Devin Williams, maybe?
Yeah, maybe a Devin Williams. DJ Johnson, maybe. That's another school one for me. Like, could he just be tired of the school routine aspect? And we're not trying to say that they don't like school, but like you said, Eric, about Sala, like, do you want to be a 25-year-old senior in college? Like, that can be – it's not for everybody.
We should note DJ is questionable to play this weekend, by the way, just on the injury note from DJ Johnson. So.
Okay. So it's going to be interesting to see. I mean, Travis Tide said he's not going to walk pregame ceremonies, but it'll be interesting to see if any other notable guys do walk in this group. All right, let's transition over now to some of our pregame predictions for what's going to happen in this one. I'll start things off individually for the offensive side of the football. I say he's coming back, but you guys both think he's gone. And if he is playing his last game, it's going to be a heck of a game for Travis Dye in my eyes. I think he's going to go over 200 all-purpose yards, over 130 yards on the ground, and he's going to score two or more touchdowns. He was not the focal point of the offense for whatever reason against Utah, and I think that's going to be rectified. And a lot of the offense for Oregon and a lot of their success, the vein of it's going to be Travis Dye.
So we're jumping in here. So this prediction will make I'll explain it why it makes sense. It'll be surprising to start, and then it'll make more sense later when I do my team offense prediction. I think one of Oregon's freshman receivers has a 100-yard game. Mm. That group would include Chris Hudson, second-year freshman. That counts for me. Dante Thornton, Troy Franklin, and then another name, which I didn't include, by the way, in my scope of Domus because it hadn't been talked all the way through. Seven McGee is now playing receiver basically full-time at slot. So I'm including him there. I don't know if he'll have a huge role. He's still behind Chris Hudson on the depth chart. But I think one of these guys has a big game through the air. I think Oregon will need to pass. Frankly, I think Oregon State's secondary is quite susceptible to the pass. And say what you want about Anthony Brown. And most of the things that during the turkey talk the other day, at least the place I was at, the things that were said weren't all that positive regarding Anthony, which makes sense, I think, based upon how he played last weekend and just kind of the way the season's gone. But I will say that, like, I think there's a potential for them to have success throwing the ball. And I think if they're going to have success, it's going to have to come to a freshman. I could just see the way this rivalry works, that it would be kind of fitting to have that kind of narrative develop of, oh, remember when Dante Thornton had 130 yards to help the Ducks beat Oregon State in 2021 when everyone was hurt. And that was where his star, you know, first shined kind of thing. So I think one of these guys is a big game.
In order for one of those guys to have a big game, Anthony Brown needs to play well, which I have as my prediction. I have AB playing well, coming off of a brutal performance against Utah. I mean, there were moments against Utah where it seemed pretty good. You know, Anthony Brown was taking shots down the field. I have him throwing for over 250 yards, plus two touchdowns to the air and a touchdown on the ground. I just think this is like one of his last times to show out for Oregon. They need him. Like Eric was saying, I think Oregon State's secondary is a little susceptible to being beat deep. Obviously, the offensive weapons aren't there. Johnny Johnson, Jalen Redd being out for the year, Micah Pittman transferring. You still have some talent, though. Troy Franklin, Dante Thornton, Devin Williams. Those are all talented guys. Chris Hudson had near 100 yards last week on only four catches. These are some talented dudes. They can still get out and get open. And it's up to Anthony Brown to find them. And I think he does this weekend against Oregon State.
This is going to be a theme for me, and it's going to be a teaser for my game prediction. I don't think Oregon State really is going to be able to consistently stop Oregon on offense when Oregon has the ball. And I'm going to see my team prediction is that the Oregon offense will score touchdown drives, or just they'll score drives in general, where they go 60 yards or more. Four times or more in this game. They're going to drive the length of the field quite a bit and put on points. I think this could be a game in which, because of the styles of both teams, it could go pretty quick from a time perspective. But I have Oregon's offense going the almost, you know, the length of the field, essentially four or more times for touchdowns or field goals.
I like that. Mine is much more tame, and it's, again, based on the passing offense. And I think these are kind of bold predictions because Oregon just was completely unable to throw the ball. I shouldn't say completely unable, but struggled to throw the ball last week. They're down so many receivers. And so I think 250 or more yards through the air on Saturday. I think Oregon will want to establish the run, obviously. They will make that a priority. That was something that they just weren't able to accomplish against Utah for a variety of reasons based upon the way the game played out, based upon getting behind, based upon penalties that made it hard to run on early downs, based upon, you know, some play calling stuff, which was seemed like first and second down, they threw it a little bit more. I think they're going to want to establish the run, but I also think they're going to try to throw the ball deep in this game. And I wouldn't be surprised to see the first series even just a concerted effort to try to move the ball down the field fast, vertically. Because, I think Oregon has better speed on the outside than what Oregon State has defensively. And Oregon State has given up big plays this year. Now, it really comes down to, can Oregon actually capitalize on this advantage? And it's been a thing that they've had all season. And again, all season, it's been very infrequent that they have. But so maybe I'm kind of trying to be too glass half full here. But I really think for Oregon to win this game, they're going to have some success throwing. I think they will. Brown with 250 or more yards. In fact, I said the team 250 or more yards. So maybe it won't be Brown, but it probably will.
Surprise pass. Who's your pick to make a pass as a wide receiver? Who you got?
Who do I think could throw a ball really far? For some reason, Devin Williams feels like he could really fling one.
I think that's the target, though.
What's that?
I think that's the target.
Like, it's probably the target. Okay. Dante Thornton. I'm thinking bigger bodies guys have a little stronger arm. I don't know.
I think
I'm taking Dante Thornton.
Okay. Matt thinks Chris Hudson.
That's a good one too. I like him. He probably has a good arm. Anyways, just thought I'd ask because that's something that hasn't happened for Oregon this year. Just like an end around. So for my offensive team prediction, I have Oregon with 200 yards on the ground, 200 plus yards on the ground. I think they figure it out. Oregon State's near the bottom in terms of Pac-12 tackles for loss, sacks. So they don't get too much defensive pressure going on. I think Oregon's offensive line is really good this year. I think they were flattened by Utah last week. I think they had a lot to work on. I think they made some adjustments over the week. And I don't think Oregon State's defensive line is nearly as good as Utah's. Again, no disrespect to Oregon State's defensive line. I just think that it's just a difference. That's all. And I think that difference pays off. And I think Oregon's able to get some push and really solidify their ground game with Travis Dye or Byron Cardwell or maybe Anthony Brown if Brown is feeling healthier. I think that'll be hugely imperative, A, to getting to this prediction, which will help me, and B, getting Anthony Brown running. And that's going to be huge to Oregon winning the game if they do win it. Because if he runs the ball, that adds another element that Oregon State's defense has to care about. And that's just going to be a much easier game for Oregon to win.
All right, individual defense. Oregon State leads or is second in the conference in rushing attempts per game at 42.18. Side note, Oregon is third at 39, hence the reason why I think this game could go pretty quick. Both teams wanting to run the football a ton. I think with all those rushing attempts that we see from Oregon State, I think that's going to set up a scenario where Noah Sewell is going to have a big game. I've gone pretty outlandish with some of these picks with him. You know, I think I named like 16 at one point. I'm going to tone it back a little bit to 12. But I think this is going to be a game where if Oregon wins, it's going to be because Noah Sewell is very active and getting the ball carrier down before he gets too many yardage. Because Noah Sewell could have 20 tackles, but it could be after gains of 8 yards. And is that really a good performance from Noah Sewell? That being said, I think Noah Sewell has one of his better games, and it's going to be required for Oregon to win. They cannot win this game without Noah Sewell having a big game. He's going to have 12 or more tackles in this football game.
I went more broad because at the time of making my Scopeldama's prediction on Wednesday, I wasn't 100% certain Verone McKinley would play. And he's the person I had in mind when I made this prediction. But I'm predicting an Oregon defensive back has 2 turnovers. That can be interceptions. That can be fumble recoveries. I do think Oregon will need to force some turnovers in this one. And I mentioned it on a previous show, I think, with Angie Machado. I don't know if we talked about it on another one of our shows. I wrote about it extensively. Just Chance Nolan and the correlation between his touchdown to interception ratio being really, really good in wins. I think it's like 13-3 in wins or 14-3 in wins. But in losses, it's 3-5. 3 games they've lost, he's turned it over at least once through the air. He threw 2 picks, I think, against both Cal and Colorado. So this is a guy who is very productive when Oregon State is successful. When he's not very productive and he's struggling, Oregon State takes a hit. And again, I'm kind of reverse engineering an Oregon victory here of like, what does Oregon State do poorly in its losses? And one of the things is turn the ball over. So I think, and again, getting in line with my rivalry hero narrative, I think on offense, there'll be a true freshman receiver who steps up. And on defense, I think a defensive back will step up, whether that be Verone McKinley, who's kind of my top pick for it, or maybe it's a Jordan Happel, which would be kind of a nice narrative of in-state kid playing in this rivalry, making some plays, being a difference maker. Maybe it'll be Mikhail Wright in what will amount to his final game at Autzen Stadium. As we've established, we think he goes pro. Could it be DJ James or Jamal Hill putting a cap on a year that started with them being arrested for kind of really silly stuff, and now they have this big moment at the end? I kind of can feel this would all feel pretty effective if this is what takes place. So again, kind of reverse engineering it, trying to find a narrative. One Oregon defensive back has at least has 1 or 2 interceptions / turnovers forced.
I'm piggybacking off of Matt here. I had the same thought process, the same idea. I also have Noah Sewell having 12 plus tackles and 1.5 tackles for loss. I just think Oregon State's really going to try to get the ground game going first. I wouldn't be surprised to see Sewell have like 8 to 9 tackles by halftime. If Oregon can stop the run, they're going to force Oregon State to throw the ball, obviously, which could be where Eric's prediction comes into play. But I think Oregon's going to be really aggressive on the ground game early on. And that leads me to believe that Sewell's going to be at the forefront of that. I think he's one of the most talented linebackers in the country, definitely one of the most talented linebackers in the Pac-12. Oregon State's going to have a lot to do with him. I think this could be a game where Jeffrey Bossa does some work as well. I think this could be a game where we kind of see the potential in Jackson LeDuc if he's healthy, if he's up to football speed. Because he got in there against Utah and he played just fine. We'll see how many snaps he gets this week. It might be something to keep an eye on going forward. But he's another guy who's already lifted on the
Keith Brown this week, so opportunity for him to play a lot. Keith Brown's out.
Right. So yeah, that'll be important to watch. I do think the linebacker position is going to be huge for Oregon against Oregon State with the tight ends, with the running game. So that's why I think Noah Sewell is going to have a big day at the office.
All right, my team defensive prediction. Like I said, my team picks are going to be a precursor for what's to come from a game pick. I don't think Oregon's defense is going to really stop Oregon State a ton either. And so I'm replicating my offensive team pick to my defensive team pick. I think Oregon's defense gives up scoring drives of 60 or more yards at least three times in this game. We're going to see Oregon State just go down the field and put up points. And it could be one play, to be honest with you. We see funky things in these games. But I just think with the injuries that Oregon has, with the offense that they're facing, with the struggles that we saw the previous week, everything, you know, all mishmashed together, we're going to see a performance where this is going to be one in which it's going to be a shootout. And Oregon's defense is going to give up some big plays, some long drives that ended scores.
Yeah, mine's also a non-positive Oregon defense prediction. I think Oregon State will run for more rushing yards in this game than any team Oregon has faced this year. Utah currently has the high watermark with 203. A week ago, prior to Utah, it was 202 from Arizona, which is kind of funny that Arizona was the previous leader, given the fact that the Wildcats aren't a very good football team, but that was where it was at. So yeah, I think Oregon State 204 or more yards in this game to get to the number. I think BJ Baylor is a problem. And I think we saw a year ago against Jamar Jefferson, some massive issues stopping him, slowing him down, and how that impacted that game. And I feel like we could see similar difficulties with Baylor on the ground. And like Matt, I think we'll get to our score predictions in a moment here. I think there's going to be some points scored in this one. I think it's going to be a really competitive game. I don't expect it to be one where one defense completely shuts down the opposing offense. I think there's too much pride on the line. And frankly, I think these offenses performing better collectively over the course of the season, for the most part. Obviously, individual games are different, but that these offenses are going to come up and show some things. I think some of the optimism around Trent Bray and what Oregon State has done after making the move away from Tim Tibisaar, like, it's pretty impressive to do that against Stanford, I guess, maybe not, and Arizona State more so. But Oregon is a different animal, and I think Oregon will have some success. But on the flip side, I think the Beavers will also move the ball effectively.
I actually had a positive Oregon defensive team prediction, which is, you know, shocking. I actually think Oregon will make a lot of adjustments on their defensive front and hold Oregon State to under 175 yards rushing.
Now, granted, love it.
Exactly. 175 yards on the ground is still a lot. But remember, they average just a hair under 230 yards. So it's just like a 55-yard difference, delta. So I don't know. I think Oregon they absolutely must make a defensive line adjustments against Oregon State. They cannot go into Oregon State with the same mentality they had against Utah and apparently Arizona. And if they do, they're just going to get slashed. And I don't think that this team is going to get slashed on the ground that badly. I think it's going to be really hard to contain BJ Baylor at all. I think he's such a talented running back. This is a good offensive line that Oregon State has. They're going to get theirs 100%. It just depends how much they get and, you know, how much Oregon can limit them in the red zone specifically and limit big chunk plays, you know, 20, 30 yard gains. So I think that's going to be the difference between a 215, 220 yard outing from Oregon State and 175, 165 are those big chunk plays.
All right, let's move over to some game predictions here. I don't think there's going to be a lot of punting in this game. I think there will be some turnovers, but I think there's going to be a ton of points. And I just go back and look at the history of these games, and there seems to always be every other year or every year, just a run of points. I mean, 41-38 last season. Oregon did a lot of the heavy lifting in 2018, but it was 55-15. I mean, that's 70 points there. 69-10 the year before that. In 16, it was 34-24 Oregon State. 15, 52-42, you know, 36-35, 49-21. You know, we see a lot of points in this series for whatever reason. It's not very often do we see, you know, a defensive slugfest like we did in 2019 when it was 24-10. I don't think either team's really going to be able to stop him. And the offense that just makes a boneheaded mistake or the most boneheaded, you know, self-inflicted type mistakes will be the one that loses. And the defense will get some of the credit for that. But I think it's more so going to be Oregon got called for a holding penalty and then a false start. And then, you know, they put themselves way behind schedule and just, you know, couldn't make a move, had to punt, and Oregon State goes down and scores, or vice versa. I think it's going to be big run games for both teams. And I think what ultimately is going to be the difference is Oregon's red zone defense maybe not breaking and forcing Oregon State to take a couple field goals instead of touchdowns, and Oregon being able to execute and score touchdowns when they get into that red zone and not settle for field goals. That's going to be the difference. Literally, you're giving up points, but not giving up the most points possible. And so I'm going to go Oregon 42, Oregon State 37. I've flip-flopped on this score quite a bit. I've had it 42-41. I've had it 42-38. I think it's going to be very close, and it literally could be Oregon winning from behind and, you know, a touchdown with a minute or less than a minute to go in the game.
What you just said at the end there is what I think will happen. I think Oregon's going to score a winning – I think they're going to have a game-winning touchdown drive. And it's going to be a very frustrating game to some degree, because I don't think – I think Oregon fans still – I don't want to say they all expect a blowout win or they expect Oregon to just hammer Oregon State, because I've seen that. Yeah. I do think there is going to be a level of disappointment that Oregon will be trailing late in the fourth quarter. But I think – and again, I'm just all about narratives today, I think. But I also think – wouldn't it feel pretty fitting for Anthony Brown just to leave Oregon's offense back at the end of a game? It happens all year. The fans and I understand why. I'm not bagging on the fans for being critical of Anthony Brown. We've been plenty critical of Anthony Brown, and for good reason. He hasn't played well in certain moments, but it does feel like he's typically had a response. And so I'm kind of anticipating a game that is really back and forth. I think I wrote this on Beaver Blitz. We do a Q&A. I think I wrote, I'd be pretty surprised if one team leads by two scores for a significant part of this game. I really think it's going to be pretty close the whole way. I think Oregon is going to score on a touchdown drive at the end. Maybe the touchdown pass will go to this true freshman receiver I'm talking about, or maybe there'll be another freshman receiver, or another key player make a big play. I just could kind of see this being one where it's going to be a rivalry game with so much on the line. Obviously, recording this Friday morning, we'll see what happens with Washington State, Washington. Washington wins that game, the whole shebang is between Oregon and Oregon State. If Washington State wins, Oregon State is playing for a little bit less. But either way, there's so much on the line here. I think this is going to be a game that we look back in like 5 or 10 years and go, that was one of the more fun ones in this rivalry in a while. I mean, I really feel like that's what we're up for, what we're headed towards on Saturday. So I have a little lower scoring, but not a lot lower scoring. I go Oregon 31, Oregon State 28. Oregon goes on a scoring drive at the end to win this football game after trailing for most of the fourth quarter. I don't think they'll be down 10, 14 points, but I do think they'll trail at times in this game. And I think they'll need a big drive late. Maybe this defense will need to get a stop right before it to give themselves a chance. But I think this is going to be one where just because it feels fitting, Anthony Brown makes some big plays late, and the Ducks get out with the win and go get a shot at the Utes. I don't know if they want it. I mean, I know they want it, but after what they just showed in that game, it's going to be tough, but I think they're going to give themselves an opportunity to win.
Obviously, you guys remember earlier in the season where like three straight Oregon games came down to the final defensive possession and right on the goal line. And that's what's going to happen again on Saturday. That's what I feel. Yeah. I don't think the offense is going to go down and lead the team to a victory. I think the defense is going to have to make a stand to lead the team to a victory. Again, I think Anthony Brown's going to have a good day. I think the offense is going to pick things back up. So it's going to be a little more high scoring than your average Oregon game this season. But yeah, Eric, like what you're saying, your sentiment about this is we're going to look back a couple of years, be like, oh, this is a damn good game. This is one of the better ones we've had. And whatever you'd like to call this, the rivalry, the artist formerly known as. But yeah, I think this is going to be, a really close game the entire time. Definitely have Oregon trailing at one point, whether that's in the first quarter, whatever the case may be. I just think it'll be really closely contested, really close knit. Definitely some tempers that are going to flare at one point or the other. It's going to be a good overall football game. I'm excited to watch this. Regardless of the outcome, I think it's just going to be really good. That being said, the outcome I have is Oregon winning 38-31. I think this is just going to be a really closely contested game. It's going to be a push on the spread, which is unfortunate. But yeah, I think there's a part of me that sees either team winning this game pretty easily. And I was pretty close to picking Oregon State. Ultimately, I decided that I think the home field advantage will help Oregon. I think Autzen will get up for it. Obviously, there will be plenty of Beaver fans in town to make it less of a competitive edge than normal. But the home field advantage, just the better talent, I think will come into play. At one point, something like a Kayvon Thibodeau sack on a huge third down is just going to come. And that's just someone being way better than their opposition. So I think that's going to happen a couple times during the game where something will flow Oregon's way because they have a more talented player. But I think regardless, it's going to be really close. I think this Oregon State team shouldn't be undervalued. They're a very good team, very good squad, well coached. Their defense is playing at a high level when they need to. And this is basically for all the marbles. And this is for all the marbles in the Pac-12 North. So that'll be a lot of fun. And I think Oregon really wants another shot at Utah. So I think they're going to come and play hard and should be a good one.
Can I tie together your goal line stand thing? It will be what they weren't able to do last year in the Oregon State game. Mm. Oregon State wins on the QB sneak in the closing seconds. You're saying this year, get it done. I like it.
Get it done. I should know. It's something that's interesting. I was tipped off this by someone that was at Las Vegas for the basketball games. They're trying to push tickets right now. It's not a sellout, and face value of the cheapest ticket for Autzen is $80 through Go Ducks, and the U of O cut the price in half this week to try and get people to come into the game. And we'll see if it's going to work out or not. But I mean, I went actually and bought 3 tickets for my wife and 2 boys to go to this game. And in certain sections, there were plenty of seats that were available. So I'm curious, A, what the fan environment's going to be like and how many people from Corvallis make the trip. It could be a week where there's a lot of optimism around this Beaver program this season. Maybe we see a bigger crowd than expected. And with a downer performance last week by Oregon, maybe it leads to a less hostile environment.
That'd be kind of disappointing, wouldn't it? I mean, yeah. The students are also, if they're not gone, some of them are, I think some of them have gone home, right, for Thanksgiving break probably. So maybe that's where some of that's coming from. I don't know. But yeah, that would be disappointing if it felt like it was not a very raucous home environment for what's all on the line. And I think would speak to sort of, I don't want to say everything that's wrong with the fan base, because I think the fan base is pretty great, but I do think there's a tendency to get kind of lost in the moment of what's been a special season and everything that's still on the line. If you don't think it's a good game to come support, I don't really get it. This is sort of a rivalry game that sets up everything you'd want for in a rivalry game, where it's, you know, Oregon State won last year's game. These teams are pretty evenly matched, as we've established on this podcast. The winner more than likely wins the division. Oregon still has an opportunity to win the conference for a third straight year and go win a Rose Bowl. Like, there's so much on the line. So I would hope this is more like logistically issues because of travel and Thanksgiving, right, as opposed to it being the fans are just kind of like, yeah, I'm checked out.
Well, I can tell you right now, while you were talking, I went to go back and look at the map again. I hadn't done this in 2 days or 3 days now. It's significantly fewer available tickets. So it's going to be a pretty good crowd, it looks like.
Good.
But who bought those tickets? Because
Yes, right.
Great. They did drop the price significantly on a lot of those tickets.
Well, we will see. I think that's an interesting angle. Interesting angle.
All right, it's going to do it for us here on the Odds and Audibles podcast. Hopefully you guys enjoy your Friday. Get ready for yourself in the game on Saturday. Go to duckterritory.com. Post-game, we'll be on the site all day, publishing stories, getting video up, and then we'll have our post-game podcast reaction, which could be leading to a discussion of season recap or a potential rematch and 13th game of the year against the Utah Utes. We'll find out here in, about 24 hours or so. Until then, you've been listening to the Odds and Audibles podcast.
Talk to you later, folks.
Peace.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.